Everybody's body changes during puberty, and for kids on the autism spectrum and their families, this time may be challenging. We're talking about puberty, relationships, and sexual health on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What can families expect when children on the spectrum reach puberty, and how can they help their teen through this time of change? We're at 800-642-1234. Are you a parent or sibling of someone with autism or an intellectual disability? What challenges and opportunities have you experienced with them throughout the years? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Melissa Duby now. She is a research associate and educational consultant at the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community. She's worked in the public school system for 18 years with students with disabilities. Melissa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate, for having me.
You found that some parents seem shocked when their child with autism begins puberty because their developmental level is that of a child, and it can be difficult to imagine they've reached this stage, but the physical maturing doesn't wait. How do you help parents prepare for this phase of their child's life?
I think they just need to start talking to their kids at an early age just about their bodies. There's lots of books just on puberty that are good for it, even if you don't have a disability. Start showing them pictures about how their bodies will be changing. Talk about it. Become aware of what will happen and, you know, start practicing. So,
and when you say start practicing, what can you tell parents about practicing? Because this can be a difficult thing.
Yeah, for girls, start looking at menstruating. So you practice putting like a thin pad in their underwear and make sure they understand the sticky side goes down on the underwear. Marking the underwear, like where exactly it should go with a permanent marker so that they get it in exactly the right place. You know, only wear it for like 10 minutes because, you know, when you're not menstruating, it's really it would be uncomfortable. But they could, you know, then get used to rolling it back up and putting it back into the wrapper and throwing it away. And, you know, cleaning their hands. So just gradually, you can even put like food coloring in a pad so that they understand that it's, you know, what's going to happen or what it will look like. So just small, you know, step-by-step preparation.
Yeah, it does sound step-by-step going through the motions, but you haven't gotten there yet. So there is practice involved.
Yes, and I think the more concrete you can make it for individuals with autism or intellectual disabilities, the better off it will be. And so you're pre-teaching exactly what's going to happen.
And what about for boys as they come to this age?
So boys, it's more about they're going to have a lot of erections and they're unplanned. It's not that they're attracted to anyone. So they're going to have to look at the different types of underwear they're wearing. Maybe they were wearing briefs before and now they need to wear looser underwear, so boxer shorts, so that they can make little adjustments and it's a little more comfortable. I've also had dads tell me that they tell their kids to hold a folder or a backpack in front of the front of their pants so that when they have erections at school, it's going to last a few minutes. This is your plan. And then you'll have a plan, or you know, it's not something they have control over. So not to make it obvious, like don't hit your penis, just casually try to hide it and go get a drink of water, you know, so just have a slight plan. Or also boys will have nocturnal emissions or wet dreams at night. And so what is the plan for that? Have a basket next to your bed so that you can just change your wet clothes and put on dry clothes. So just have a plan.
We're talking with Melissa Duby. She is a research associate and educational consultant at the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. How did you, as a family, process dating and relationships while your child with a disability grew older? What misconceptions would you like corrected for people who don't experience this on the day-to-day? We're at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Melissa, hygiene becomes more important for all teens at this time of life. Can you talk about some strategies parents can use and language that helps teens with autism or intellectual and developmental disabilities understand and implement best hygiene practices?
Well, hygiene is sensitive because individuals with autism, they have sensory issues. And so often the smells, you could say unscented for deodorant, and unscented to a person that's really sensitive to that will still think it has a scent. So it's important to try different deodorants. So it might be buy something that, you know, three different products that are unscented. It might be gel they like, it might be powder, might be a spray. So really exploring which kind of deodorants work. And so just exploring even for shaving. I have had four boys, they have to be desensitized to the feeling of an electric shaver. And so it helps if they put it like on their palm first and then on the back of their hand and then on your arm and gradually working up to your neck so that they will be desensitized to the noise and the vibration. So part of the hygiene part is getting used to the products.
Because these products have impact on the sensory and certainly people on the autism spectrum, senses are heightened perhaps.
Exactly.
How important is it for parents to use the correct terminology for anatomy when discussing these changes with their child?
That's really important. I think it's that you need to start using penis and start using vagina. And because the reason, if you're a 42-year-old man and you say, my pee-pee hurts, you know, or a girl says, down there, well, where is down there? You know, but if we say, my vagina itches, or it's my breasts are sore, you know, that's specific to a doctor, somebody that can be medically helpful.
And parents themselves need to be comfortable with these topics. How can parents be better prepared to answer sensitive questions and not be flat-footed?
I think that, like when I first started talking about this topic, I had to say the medical terms out loud because I was uncomfortable saying penis out loud. So I had to say it repeatedly to friends and family so that I could be comfortable. And I also would suggest that they just read books on puberty. Just go to your local bookstore or library so that they can just understand. I might have understood my own menstruating a process, but to make sure I understood the fallopian terms, you know, fallopian tubes or the terms that go along with shedding the liner and those kind of things so that they're sure that they're using the proper medical terms. So the more knowledge parents have, the more knowledge that they can then share with their children.
And it seems as if you should be reading the books with the ones that you recommend for your child or watching the videos that you are wanting your teen to watch. So that
definitely.
You know the content as well, because oftentimes it's like, oh, here, just watch this. I already know what's going on.
Right. No, definitely. I would definitely watch it with, I'd preview it first, and then I would watch it with them for sure.
Children are going to make mistakes through this time of change, as will adults. What advice do you have for parents for when that inevitably happens, either with a child or with a parent?
I think as a parent can really be observant. They can start seeing how their child is changing. You know, like a girl usually starts her period 6 months to a year after she has breast mounds. And so, you know, start noticing, are they growing pubic hair? Are they getting taller? You know, so really understanding if the parents understand the developmental stages, then they can look for that in their child. So even if they have an intellectual disabilities, then they still would be able to see that, you know, the child's not going to be able to say, hey, mom, it's something weird is growing, you know, down there, you know, in my vagina. So it's, I don't know really what that is. So it would be really helpful if parents are observable.
I was reading some literature in preparing for today, and it said that there is perhaps a tendency for children with autism to have seizures during this time of puberty or heightened risk of seizures. Is there anything to that?
I'm not familiar with that. I do know that as children go through puberty, their medications may need to be changed because their hormones are changing.
And children are learning in different ways. For a parent with a child with autism or an intellectual and developmental disability, it's unlikely this is the first obstacle that the family has had to tackle. Can you talk to us about how important is that for parents to develop different strategies based on their child's learning style?
I think it's really important to know their own child's learning style. So if they taught their kid how to ride a bike or use a utensil at home, if, you know, maybe they're a visual learner or they learn through videos or just concrete steps, practice and role model, whatever has worked for teaching other strategies, just think about puberty as another developmental stage. It's just a period in their life. It's a, you know, 4 or 5 years, and then you move on to another stage in your life. And so take a breath, be open-minded, have a good sense of humor, and you'll be able, anyone can, you know, the parents will be able to get through this stage of life as well.
You've seen lots of literature, lots of books, lots of videos. Is there any one particular one that comes to mind that you've seen has just been really effective for families to use?
I think, I wrote a book with a colleague of mine. It's called Intimate Relations and Sexual Health. And so it's really written well for middle or high school to adults. And it really is to make everyone informed about all of their decisions. Another book I really like is Daphida Hartman's called Sexuality and Relationship Education for Children and Adolescents with Autism. And it's more about puberty. So it leads up to what our book is about.
Puberty can be especially difficult on teens with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. We're looking at how to approach this time of change. Melissa Duby is our guide. She's a research associate and educational consultant at the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Caregivers, what strategies have worked best to help your child cope and understand puberty? What advice would you give others? How did you as a family approach things like dating and relationships while your child with a disability grew older? What misconceptions would you like to clear up for people who don't experience this each day? You can call in at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a moment on the Ideas Network. Children with special needs move through puberty. They grow into adulthood all the same. We're exploring how to support a child with a disability during this period. Here with us on The Morning Show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There are the emotional and social changes of adolescence, compounded by the hormonal, the physical changes. We're looking at how to navigate this time with your insights, your questions along the way. Are you an educator who teaches kids and teens with disabilities? What have you learned through your experience? Share with us at 800-642-1234. Are you a sex education teacher? How have you adjusted your approach for teens with different abilities? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Melissa Duby stays with us. She is our guide. She's a research associate and educational consultant at the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community. Melissa, you've worked with educators and teachers in public schools to better understand and adapt to the needs of students with autism or intellectual and developmental disabilities. So what should teachers know or be aware of and be prepared for when they're teaching students at this stage?
I think it's important that whatever the education is on sexual health in the public schools, that the individuals with disabilities be included. And so every state either has an opt-in or an opt-out. And so just make sure that the parents understand the curriculum and let them preview it beforehand so that they understand that they can be included. And then so that the parents then can teach the after the curriculum to because they'll need to supplement it one time or the 4 or 5 times that it's in the health class or biology class won't be enough. So they'll need multiple ongoing conversations about sexual health.
What are some types of supplementary conversations that could be had, or how to reinforce what is being taught in the classroom?
Well, like I shared earlier, when parents are talking with their kids, it's the same thing. They're going to need to have more step-by-step instruction. We're going to need more role-playing, you know, individuals, so that it's at the specific scenarios are for meaningful for the individuals with disabilities, and so that it's practical for them. And so it's not just learning the instruction. They then have to be able to learn how to generalize the instruction within their daily lives.
Do you see teachers able to meet these students where they are, or do you find sometimes teachers are perhaps dumbing down the curriculum because they don't think that the student with a disability is going to get it?
I think that it's not that they're, I think that they're familiar with it. I think sometimes it's that they're uncomfortable, they're not really sure what to teach. And so becoming more knowledgeable themselves, just like parents are becoming more knowledgeable, will help bridge this gap.
As children become teens and they grow into adults, they may develop interests in having romantic relationships. How do you advise parents and teens with autism to approach this?
I think it's important to start with just friendships. You know, individuals with autism, one of their major deficits is understanding social relationships of any kind. And so understanding that there are stages of relationships, you know, if a person smiles at them, that doesn't mean now we're dating or going to get married. And so that's a misunderstanding for individuals with autism or individuals with intellectual disabilities. And so that we need to really understand, well, what, you know, that first you have a stranger, and I think of it like a bullet, like a circles of within each other. And so the larger circle is strangers. And there's a lot of strangers in our life. And then we go to like casual acquaintances. And who are those? Those are people we just meet in the street, or we meet just might be at our school, but we're really not friends. And then we go to friends. Well, what do we do with friends? And how do we start meeting up with friends? And parents really have to be a part of this so that they bring the kids over to their house and that they try to initiate some of that so that the friendships can continue. But then there's friendships of, are they really friends? And teaching a hidden curriculum that about social relationships is an ongoing process. And so before you can even begin dating, is that to understand the friendship part. But then you can have casual dating, then you have romantic dating, and so before you get to even an intimate relationship. So there's lots of stages, and to understand and define that for the individuals.
And that can get really complicated. Relationships are notoriously complicated and complex.
Yes, for sure.
And so it sounds like a parent has to be really, really aware of how those relationships around their child are developing.
Yeah, and involved. I have a family I'm working with right now, and the parent is bringing the friends over to their house because the student or the child really is more comfortable in their own home. And so that really helps that she's willing to have, you know, three or four kids come over to the house. And so she's the one calling the parents saying, hey, can you come over this weekend? Or, hey, but how about if we get the boys together and they go watch a movie together? So she's the one trying to get everyone to make this work.
How important is it to let them know that sexual feelings they may be having are normal?
I think it's very important. The individuals with disabilities have sexual feelings just like everybody else. And so, but then to teach them what that means. And so with our individuals that don't have disabilities, we might just give them a book and say, here you go, which I'm not supporting that. I think everyone needs to have a lesson, many, many lessons on our bodies and our relationships. But individuals with disabilities, they even need more practice with that. And so every step of the way, someone has to be teaching them a new skill for them to acquire it.
Studies have shown that adults with intellectual disabilities are sexually abused at 7 times the rate of those without disabilities. How can we teach consent to this population?
I think to start early, when we start tickling our little, 7 or 8 year olds, and they say stop, we stop. And we say, you know, you said stop, so I'm going to respect what you have to say. And so as they get older, we say, anytime they say no, I don't want that, that we respect that. And so that we're reiterating that your words of no are important. And then we can start saying, you can tell anyone that, no, I don't want to be touched. And that we say only the people that touch where our bathing suits go. So that's a concrete visual that they can see, and we can make a diagram of that. Your bathing suit goes in these spots. And so only the people that can touch you in those spots are medical people or your caregivers. Now, a lot of sexual abusers are caregivers, so it's really important that parents know whether their child can give consent. And if they can't, then they have to be super protective. If they can, then teach them maybe a contract to say that if someone touches you in these areas, then I'm going to scream and run away, and I'm going to yell, and I'm going to go tell the person on this contract that I know I can trust. So just to be have a continual conversation about what consent is.
And it's not the person's sole responsibility to make sure they aren't abused. That, you know, you're relying both on your parents, but also that the fact that, you know, that child may or may not have that ability to understand consent.
Exactly, especially if you have an intellectual developmental disability, you just may not know what consent is. And so then the parent needs to be vigilant about being protective of their child.
Melissa Dubey, how has your field evolved, and where have been the real aha moments that have been able to help this area of understanding as people with disabilities grow into adults?
I think that I have a particular interest now also in intellectual disability, developmental disabilities, and I'm on a couple grants, and we are working towards educating adult women with disabilities and understanding what their knowledge is. The research shows us that they haven't been exposed to sexual health, and so now trying to educate them as adults. And so I'm on a project that's working on making sure that they understand everything about their bodies and relationships and sexual health.
Well, Melissa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. And if you have anybody needs any support, you can call or email me at Indiana Resource Center for Autism.
Melissa Dubey is a research associate and educational consultant at the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community. She's worked in the public school system for 18 years with students with disabilities. Earlier, we talked with Marcy Brost, Executive Director of the Developmental Disabilities Network, and we also spoke with Catherine Auerbach, Executive Director of Movin' Out, about housing solutions for adults with disabilities and for families that have children with disabilities. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This conversation comes to you on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.